they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a house. And if I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Buy you furniture for your house. Maybe an ice chest.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Just getting started here this morning. Jay-Z says, let's go! Alright, we're going. SP Futures up 7, Dow Futures up 36, NASDAQ Futures up 17. Do we have Mr. Carl?
In one moment.
We'll have Mr. Carl in one moment. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday's second day in a row, although we didn't finish anywhere near the lows. We're down 400, we finished down 200. I'll give you the exact numbers here on yesterday. Dow was down 221. S&P is down 19, NASDAQ down 60. We were down as much as 40-plus in the S&P and well over 100 in NASDAQ. Carl, how are you, bud?
I am doing great.
What are you? What do you got, a bunch of puts in your portfolio? Is that why you're doing great?
If you have puts this morning, you might not be all that happy, but no. Yesterday was a good day, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't so bad. It reaches a point where I have everybody protected, but you don't really, make anything on the downside. You just don't lose much. We're still not as good as making. You know, I don't really have extra ones because, you know, everybody's convinced that, you know, we're going to turn this around at some point. And I don't know if that's the truth or not. What do you think?
Well, I look at this and I say, okay, show me why I should be buying anything at this particular juncture, just given the basis for making an investment. And my view is always, you know, you wake up every morning, you look at whatever you got, and you say, well, you know, if I had cash today, would I buy this at today's price? And if the answer is no, then you probably ought to sell it because, you have to look at everything in the light of the day that you got, not the one that you had yesterday.
Well,
I just can't get past this idea that we have, given the movement in the market over the last, 10 years, that somehow we're going to keep managing to find a way to put a real honest-to-God 20% on an earnings, on an earnings number, and it's not all a game somewhere. Somebody's pulling something. It doesn't matter where I look. I see valuations that don't look very compelling here at all on anything.
Yeah, I get this feeling, Carl. That's why, I was trying to schedule it for tomorrow, but now we have you for today is even better because we have for more time. It seems to me that a lot of stuff is sort of coming together in some odd way. It's not so good. And I listened to, the people from CNBC yesterday afternoon, and I don't know where they get their experts, although, my buddy Dr. J, who's, obviously read a lot, there's this feeling, if you just look at the last 8 or 9 years, that all you have to do is get the Fed on your side and engage the Fed, and you can pump up. But you're also talking about people that 90% of their world is the stock market. It's not other stuff. It's not business. It's not, and, they're absolutely convinced that if the Fed comes out tomorrow with a surprise rate cut, we're fine. And I don't know. Maybe I keep reading different times in history where money supply was going down, was going up. But actually, the money supply is it's about the slowest growth now as I've seen in a long time. Now, is that the Fed's doing, or is that just the economy slowing, do you think? Have you been looking at that?
Well, yeah, I think it's more a function of the economic, backdrop. The most alarming thing to me in the macro environment is that despite the Fed, despite all these, despite this wonderful economy, despite, the job growth and everything else, we essentially have had a when adjusted for monetary expansion just from federal deficits, we have not had a single positive year of GDP expansion in the last decade. And in fact, this problem goes all the way back to around the time of the 2000 crash, the tech wreck. And it's in, that's a, if you think about that, you take that adjustment, that's awful, because we have a population that's expanding. You know, we have a workforce that's expanding, as, you know, as we go over when, you know, we do labor report summaries. That, you know, here's the number of people we're putting about 1%, and this by the way has been very consistent in the United States for a very long time. Put about 1% a year into the working age population. Okay, you know, between births and immigration, and these are people who are legitimate U.S. workers too. You know, we're not talking about the illegal guy from Mexico that comes in and, you know, picks oranges or whatever. And when you look at that, what you should see is about a 1% organic expansion in economic activity, assuming no innovation, assuming no productivity improvement, none of those things. You should see about 1% a year, compounded every year. And that's just because there's more people. It's really not more complicated than that. But instead, what you see is that while the gross number goes up every year, when you take back out the deficit spending, the federal deficit spending, which no matter how you slice it, is pure money printing. The federal government doesn't do anything other than say, okay, here's some treasuries, give me some cash, and here's the money, then we're going to throw it around. When you take that back out, all of those numbers are negative. And that's scary, because what that means is that we're not outrunning monetary expansion with productivity growth. We're not actually expanding the economy. On a per-person basis, all we're doing is going further and further into debt. And I can get away with that for quite a long time as a person, and we did in 2006 and 2007, and, you know, we know how it ended in the housing market, right, with, you know, handing out money to people who had no way to pay it back. But we're doing this on a national basis now. It's become national policy, both from the federal government and from the Federal Reserve. But those people who want to blame the Federal Reserve for this, or give them credit as being the, you know, the saviors that keep pumping up asset valuations, you guys have got this the wrong way around. It's Congress, on both sides of the aisle, that have figured out that all you have to do is find a way to spend another $1 trillion this year. And that automatically, by definition, goes into GDP as a $1 trillion GDP expansion.
Well, you would hope to get some multiplier effect, you would hope.
Well, but you don't. It's actually negative. That's the whole problem, is that when you take that number back out, the GDP number is actually negative and has been continually.
But
it's the same thing, you know, think about it this way. You make $100,000 a year, but you spend $110,000 every single year.
Which most people do.
The way you do that is by running up your credit card. Okay? You don't put your house in hock, because that takes an asset off the market. And so that is not inflationary, because you can't sell the house without paying a loan back. All right? You just go and run your Discover card, your Visa, your MasterCard, whatever. You just run your credit card up. And it keeps working, because everyone believes that the government can never fail to be able to do that.
Well,
you think about the insanity of that, but that's what's going on.
Carl, well, you just said, I'm looking here at my debtclock.org, which, by the way, thank you for getting me on this page so early in the morning. U.S. domestic product is $21 trillion or something. It is up 125% since 2000. Okay, which isn't all that much. It's up 25% in 19 years. The M2 money supply is $14 trillion, and it is up 207% since 2000.
Right.
So they should be roughly even if you want to keep inflation the way it ought to be, and they're not. One's up an awful lot more than the other. So the idea that, but I don't see what question is, first of all, neither one of us really want to be right. do we? I mean, but I get the feeling that somehow, some way, we are. I don't know what the end game is. And if I had to write, you know, books, or if I don't, I'm not good enough to write a book, but if I wrote some columns or something, and you could write them better than me, but my theme would be, Carl, that somehow or another, most of the stuff you and I learned in economics, it's either being delayed, messed with, or just isn't working. There's stuff that just isn't right. I mean, the economy you and I are looking at is nothing like people are describing. I mean, I look at this, I have a very small, you know, thing that people hear about every day and tired of it, but one of my buddies is in the auto glass business, and we get some of that from China. I have no idea how to find out how much auto glass we get from China versus here, but there's manufacturers here and there's some in China. Let's say 50-50. As soon as the 10% tariff went on, all these guys the next day got 10% increase from everybody. And the Morgan Stanley article 2 weeks ago was that the amount that somebody, they thought, I don't think the administration even thinks for a second to go through anything rigorous, but they thought that the Chinese would absorb, you know, a certain amount, because you look at the competitive nature of it. I think you and I would agree that if it's all perfectly competitive and somehow you could throw a tariff on one place, that place just has to eat it, right? If it rains over one guy's farm, he doesn't get to charge more for the corn. He just has to eat it, right? But nothing is perfectly competitive. But they were convinced that China would have to eat more than they currently are. And our guys are just saying, yippee. And there doesn't seem to be, but if you combine that with what you and I have talked about, that it's very difficult for the Carl and Chief combo to walk into the local bank here and get a loan and say, hey, these bleeps are charging 10% more for auto glass. It looks to me like I could buy this empty warehouse over here, and in 6 months I can be making this stuff, and I can be charging 5% less and get some. I don't know if we have the infrastructure for that to happen anymore, Carl. We can't get the loans, even though Sabres aren't making anything. The people who actually need them or want them, I'll use the term, the demand for money is very low. Either it's low or people can't get them. The demand might be there, and somehow or another, you and I got to sign off on our house or our wife or our kids and our dog, where we didn't have to do that. Some combination of all the crap we talk about is coming to a head here, and it's not good. And I don't know which to do first, which to fix first, even if I was in charge.
Well, you can't fix it fast. That's one of the biggest problems. But what has occurred is that, you know, the basis of capital formation is not borrowing money. The basis of capital formation is producing more than you consume.
Well, okay? It's
always been that way. The problem is nobody does that anymore.
Well, I want to push back a hair of that. On a national level, I think you're right, but on a down-to-earth level, it's you and I seeing an opportunity where we're going to make 8% or 10% on a year, and we can go borrow money for 5, and we're giving the guy 5 who just has it in the bank, so he gets money on the deal, we get money on the deal, and our workers get money on the deal. I mean, that's the basis of our business. And when you see interest rates really low, either nobody can get a loan, or there's no demand for money, both of which are very unhealthy. But clearly...
Yeah, but hold on a minute. What you're talking about here is essentially the argument that turning the crank is how we have economic progress.
No, I'm saying
wait a minute now. You're talking about the use of leverage, okay? And that is the basis of the argument.
No, it's
because if you can borrow money at 5% and you can make 10.
No, it's not. What I'm saying is the people who have the ideas and the idea of a new product, a new service, a new whatever, aren't necessarily the people who have the money to make that happen.
That's true.
So the idea of a banking industry is to match up essentially the cash with the people with the projects and the ideas that are going to take us to the next world. And they're not doing that somehow, is what I'm saying. That's why if you and I
but someone has to have the cash. See, this is where the problem comes from, is that the premise of this is the classical view of how banks are supposed to work, okay? I go out and I make $100,000, but I only spend 90, right? So
right.
I got 10, and that 10 is in a bank somewhere.
Right.
Right? And the bank can loan that out at a reserve ratio, and you know, but that's not how banks actually work in the modern world. The way banks actually work in the modern world is they give you the $10,000 loan. They have nothing. And then what they count on is that when you spend the $10,000, that the merchant that you spend it at will come back and deposit it in the bank, and therefore make their reserve ratio work. Well, that's a circular argument, and the only reason it works is because the federal government turns around and spends this money it does not have and inflates the money supply.
Well, that's another whole, how they're messing with the system, but I'm saying, in general, the way the system is supposed to work is the savers, the only reason why the savers are going to get anything is because somebody else is using the money for profit.
Right.
Anyway, I think but I'm saying the system is somewhat broken. I mean, the savings and loans is a simple example. When I was a kid, mortgages were 6%. You got 3% on your passbook. The other 3% paid not outrageous salaries to people in the savings and loan, paid for the building, paid for the Little League uniforms. There was a circle right there that everybody could understand. Right?
Yeah, but understand that what's happened here is that, okay, so buried in the bailouts and the nonsense that went on in 2008 was a one-sentence change in the TARP bill that allowed the Federal Reserve to set the reserve ratio at banks to zero.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Well, that means that the leverage level allowed in the system is infinite.
Right, which is nuts.
Okay, that's what they did. The one sentence change, as far as I know, I'm the only one that caught it before it was passed, and said, you people are out of your mind. Now, in point of fact, this was something that was being phased in and was going to happen in another 10 years anyway. All right.
Well, but they don't.
Bernanke got permission to do it right now, and you, all you got to do is look at the facts, the numbers, just out of the federal government, and where GDP expansion has been, and you know you get that off the BEA site, you get the debt numbers off the debt to the penny series, you take those two things, and you just run a simple spreadsheet and graph it. You've got nothing since then. I just put the graph up on Twitter, and there's no there. It's all the way back to 2000, but since the crash, we had 1 year where we had an actual GDP expansion. It was the 2017, incidentally, that was about 1%, and that's it. And the rest of all the other years have been negative.
Well, I think if you were to put a real inflation number in there, they're even worse.
Well, yeah, but see, the thing is that the federal debt expansion, that's monetary inflation. Hello, may I quote Friedman a little bit? Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomena.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but it's never even. You should have put that in there.
Well, no, it's not. The thing is that some people benefit mightily from it.
Well, okay? In this case, it's been.
And some people get hosed, though, terribly by it. So.
Well, I don't know if you run into the same issue, Carl. Maybe it's because my research isn't the best or something, but I started off doing, we started doing some things on student loans. By the way, tomorrow we're going to talk about it because one of our listeners, Nancy, I won't give her last name, sent me a big thing with a bunch of pretty serious studies about student loan stuff. So we're going to try and go through some of that tomorrow. But there was an article I saw, top 10, worst 10 areas were student loans. And of course, Carl, when you get to this age, you forget how to take a test. I didn't read the question. I didn't read the title. I would have assumed that it would have been somebody with, you know, University of Michigan school and Harvard Law School with a $300,000 loan or $250,000 trying to go to work in Chicago and making $70,000 a year at a law firm or $80,000, where the percentage of his first year salary, his or her, versus the law thing would be astronomical. But, of course, the article was only about people with bachelor's degree. And they start talking about these towns in Carolina and Florida, and a couple in Arizona, where the median person with a bachelor's degree is making $20,000.
Yeah.
And the student loans are, you know, 22. So they were using those ratios. I never even dreamed that's how it would come out. So I'm thinking, another article I read yesterday, and again, it's not, you know, the thing I think you and I like talking about, it's everything depends on everything else. Now, some people are predicting the effect of the tariffs is what, $850 in increased prices for every man, woman, and child. Well, a guy making $20,000 a year in bum something South Carolina, the last thing the guy needs is $850 on top of his student loan debt, on top of trying to get an apartment and feed himself. I mean, for God's sake, I mean, talk about trying to get blood out of a turnip, as the Irish used to say. I mean,
That's true, but think about where that came from, okay, and why we're in that box, if that comes to pass, okay? I'm not buying this analysis, at least at this point. But let's assume that the analysis is correct. Why are we there? Why is it, you know, the latest thing is now China is threatening, okay, we're going to play with the rare earth metal supply, right? We have quite a lot of rare earth metal deposits in the United States. And in fact,
4% of the world's reserves.
There's a mine that was just reopened that had been bought out of bankruptcy, and it's in California, right? But guess what? They're not processing any of that ore here in the U.S. What they're doing is shipping it to China,
right?
Processing it, and then it's being shipped back here in the United States. Now, think about this. Why is that happening? You're going to put this ore in a ship, you're going to send it halfway around the world, and then bring the products back here. And the answer is, we have built a society where environmental damage and destruction is unacceptable in the United States. So instead of not doing that, which costs money, we do it somewhere else. We push it. And the destruction of the environment to a totalitarian nation that doesn't care if they screw their citizens.
Right.
And we cheer this, and we say this is a good thing, and, oh, you can't stop that. By God, that would be bad.
Right.
Oh, well, you know what? I think there's something deeply immoral about poisoning other people's kids save $5.
You could put on the back of a nickel. Instead of "In God We Trust," you could put "In Out of Sight, Out of Mind," and that would be our motto, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, we're shipping waste. You got this thing going on with Duarte now, you know, that's all bent out of shape about Canada shipping containers of trash to the Philippines. Well, guess what? We do the same thing.
By the way, whatever happened to that, remember back years ago, that huge barge that was going around the world with all the garbage from New York? Where did that thing ever land?
I don't know. You know, Malaysia now is getting all bent out of shape about this too, and it's, you know, saying, "Hey, cut that blankety blank out." And that's going to become the reality more and more. What I have never understood is why we consider economic progress to be legitimate if essentially what we're doing is taking practices that we used to do here in the United States, and we deemed them unacceptable. All right, I had, where I was growing up, 4 or 5 miles from my house, was a chemical plant. You drove by it. I probably drove by it, you know, 2-3 times a week in my parents' car, and your eyes would water. I mean, you literally would choke you to go by this place. There was an open-heart steel mill that was about 4 miles from my house. Every single night, that thing opened up, and, you know, they poured the ingots. Yep. And when they did, the sky was orange. All the various chemicals got released in the atmosphere from that. Someday, hey, maybe I'll end up with another eye growing out of the back of my head or something from all of this. But today, we don't do any of those things. I drive by the same place. That plant is gone. The air is clean. The water is clean. You didn't used to be able to eat the fish around there out of the water because, you know, God knows what was in them. And that is no longer the case. So if we're going to say that this is a good thing, that we are going to be environmentally friendly, then it cannot be acceptable for American businesses to not fix the problem, but just ship it over to China and poison all the Chinese kids.
Well, it's one of those things where all this stuff comes at a cost. And if you can, I'm sure you've heard of the Ronald Coase story where it's an economic externality. If you can kick it to somebody else, it's good to go. I mean, my family, which is a short study, the Italian side came over from Italy. Duh. Imagine that, the Italian side came from Italy. I'm going to say virtually every one of the people who came over here on the boat made it to their mid 80s, 90s, lucid. No, there wasn't a speck of cancer anywhere in the thing. And I'm going to say that their kids, they probably had 5 to 6 kids that died of cancer before the age of 45 that worked in the Depression and in the World War II factories, those kinds of things. And if anybody doesn't think there's somehow a connection, I mean, I got a bridge for you, because you know what? There is, Carl. I don't know where it is or what it is or who's going to tell anybody about it, but to say that there's no connection there is obscene. I mean, we're talking people work back in the yards, that kind of place, those kinds of places. So, I mean, it's S&P futures up 7.25, Dow futures up 39, and NASDAQ futures up 18. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Carl Denninger. She is Ms. Jay-Z. Jessica is Lucy on the board, as she is every Thursday. S&P futures up 750 now. NASDAQ futures up 1950. Dow futures up 35. So Dow's leaking back a little bit. Not as much as the rest of them. I've got no real Dow stock pointing upward huge. We've got Verizon up like 50 cents and things like that. Caterpillar up 59, but nothing spiking to the upside in that group at all, at least not yet. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 29.2%, FTSE up 26.3%, CAC around up 10.2%. Let's call that after yesterday somewhat of a dead cat bounce, at least so far. Nikkei down 60.3%, Shanghai down 8.3%, 2905 still hanging over 2900. Hang Seng down 120.4%, 27,114, the whole number there. Oil up 20 cents, still $59. It's come back from its lows below 58, but it's still scratching to make it back to 60. Brent is 69, so that spread is now out to $10. So the world price of oil, the Brent price, I guess, is increasing versus ours. RBOB gas, 192, if those are interested in filling up their truck. Gold, we've got down 450, 1281. Gold still can't break out. It's between this 1278 and maybe 1285 number. It's been just hanging there for like several weeks now. Silver down 2 cents, 1438. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Morning, everyone. Time is now 6:36. Chicago weather today consists of some light rain this morning with a high of 69 and a low of 54. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 97, low of 69. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Astros 2-1. The White Sox beat the Royals 8-7. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 5-4. There are no accidents to report. Back to you.
Now, what are you rooting for today, Jay-Z, weather-wise?
No rain.
No, you're rooting for over 0.25 inches because then we're the wettest May ever.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and that's something. So, Carl, something like three of the wettest Mays ever been in the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, it's a
I look at what's going on right now, and I see you can look at you can call the trade situation the trigger. Or, you know, for whatever comes, and someone will. There's always somebody that's going to, you know, be right that time, right? I mean, you know, it was how many people were screaming about things in, you know, in 06 and 07? There were quite a few. And then the next year, uh-oh.
Yeah.
So are we headed for something like that again? I suspect the answer is yes, because the apple cart has been, every time that there's any kind of hiccup, any kind of cough, any kind of whatever, the Fed comes in, but it's not the Fed per se, because the Fed is powerless without the federal government deficit spending to back up their actions.
I would say that's the
other
way around.
You've got to look at Congress for this, and the problem with it is that it is just nothing different than pulling out the credit card. And at some point, the people who are doing that, you know, go in there and put the card down, and it comes back declined. And then you got a problem. So I see, you know, when you look at real economic activity, that's what matters. Do I think the entire world's going to come apart, you know, next week? No. But I just don't see the valuation argument for, you know, for companies that think that, well, you know, where we are today, we're going to continue to expand, you know, our earnings and our, you know, our top line revenue and earnings at 20% for the rest of eternity. That's just unrealistic. The trees do not grow to the sky.
Well, if you let them count, I'm never should be the one lecturing you. You're always lecturing me for generalizing. If you let a company buy another company every year, so you lessen the competition, the remainder company, they don't tell you how much was the old place and the numbers. They just added on to theirs. I mean, Bristol Myers should grow 20% next year because they're buying, who the hell are buying these guys? They're buying Celgene or whatever. So yeah, I mean, you might, 2 years from now, people forget Celgene. I mean, you can look at Pfizer or Merck and forget all the people they bought along the way. Squibb and all the rest of them. How many did they buy? Unilever? I mean, come on. So, I mean, yeah, you can get a growth out of a narrower stock pool, right?
Well, you can, but the understand that the basic problem with that premise, which is the same thing with buyback.
By the way, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying we're electing to not count. You know, we're gonna go squirrely of Amazon revenue more than last year. We forgot they bought whole paycheck.
Right, exactly. And whole paycheck disappeared.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So,
now, you're right. And so, there's survivor bias in the indices for that reason. All right. So anytime that you look at it at a stock index as opposed to individual securities, that survivor bias thing is there. And then you've also got the companies that cease to exist. They're not in the index anymore either. You know, they actually go under. So from an indexing perspective, some of this stuff it seems to make a little bit more sense. But when you look at what's been going on, especially with the buybacks and the share count decreases, all that really is another expression of leverage. And everybody loves it right now because people have been making profits. But boy, are they not going to like it when it's on the other side, because you multiply losses exactly the same way you multiply profits.
Well, Carl, I don't really get into much, especially when you're out of my trading strategies, but there's a sneaky reason why I have something called a Protect Index program. One is maybe I'm not the world's best stock picker and don't have a huge staff to do that. The other is indexes don't go to zero. Stocks can.
Right.
I mean, before the S&P 500 makes it to zero, PTI Securities or Carl's Hot Dogs is going to be in there. Something's going to be in there. It's not going to be zero. Where a stock, if you pick the clunker, you know, what if I'd have put all my people in United Airlines, for God's sake, or Kmart or something? I'd be off in, you know, I don't know, I'd never forgive myself, you know. But I have a feeling that if I put them in the Russell, there's going to be small-cap stocks someplace, right? It doesn't mean you can't go down 40%, but you're not going to go to zero.
Well, yeah, that's the whole, you know, that's the survivor bias that shows up in the indices. And it's one of the better arguments, if you're going to be in the market, to be in an index as opposed to being in individual names.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, the best thing in the world is to pick some, you know, if you could find one. I mean, everybody loves to do this. God, we get clients. Of course, as you know, Carl, if you've ever been in this business, there's a million people that know everything about all kinds of stocks. None of it's ever inside information, because if it was, they'd be doing better, right? people get hung up on these stocks. You know, we're absolutely the worst at it, our doctors. They all have a product. They hear about some new drug, you know, and all of a sudden they're all over the thing. I mean, for my entire career, you know, 40 years in the business, every time I ran into a doctor at a party or something, I knew I was in the stock business, they all had a tip. They all had a stock. And I don't think any single one of them I've ever known. But obviously the best thing in the world is to find some place trading a buck and a half that 5 years from now is 150, but duh. I mean, that would be nice, but how the hell do you do that? You know what? There have been times, Carl, when my portfolio had about 8 to 10 of those things in them, and I've never once have had a home run. When we were on the score, Dr. J and I, Mike North had some bizarro two gay dudes that were running a radio show in New York, and how they were going to, the thing was trading for like 2 cents and everybody bought the stuff, and I found myself with some of this on my, and of course 2 years later, I don't know what I did, but I had to write it off to get the 2 cents for my tax. I've never had one, you know, and yet everybody always has an inside track and nobody ever wins. I mean, it can't be too inside or else they're getting the wrong track or something. But I'm saying, you're right, there is a bias towards big places, and I honestly believe, and what I tell everybody, and I don't want to be like Doggy Downer, but anybody in the business of buying companies that have the next cure for, you know, you pick it, hangnails, cancer, name it, those stocks will never reach their true value because the big companies will buy them out at half their value because only they can get them through the Federal Reserve, or not the Federal Reserve, the FDA. So you end up with... You're going to have the ones that are losers, okay, which you know you're in a risky area. But the ones that are winners, if you do get the winner, instead of getting the $100 a share, you're going to get 20. Because one of these firms will buy them out beforehand because they're the only ones that can get the thing on the market.
Right.
So the whole thing is truncated. So for me, it's a bad bet, even though obviously we have clients that do that. But I mean everything that I learned in grad school, honestly, Carl, is not working right now. Not for me. It's working fine. You know, because my protected program is working out fine for my people. But, well, because on days like yesterday, we don't lose anything, or we lose a little bit. But the, you know, the whole idea that this reserve of, if all of a sudden, say we just totally skunk the Chinese, you know, this thing blows up, there's not one product here, you know, coming here. Now, this is America. You should get all kinds of people scrambling, going to their local bank, going wherever they want to be, saying there's an old factory over there. All of a sudden, we don't have any shot glasses coming from China. That place is perfect for shot glass manufacture. Loan me $150,000, I'll get the thing rolling, or get some money for your parents and other people. But now all of a sudden, you don't have that, Carl. You got people overburdened with student debt. They'll never quit their job to go do that. You've got the banks saying, we're not giving you any money as a corporation. We want personal this, we want personal that. And by the way, we're only going to give money to Microsoft to buy their stock back. The whole system seems to me like it's either sticky or not working at all. We have people PTI that lend money to people in successful plumbing programs because they don't grab a personal. Most people will pay an extra percent to not have to have a personal guarantee.
Right.
Right. We got to go to break here. We'll be right back. S&P futures up 7.25 now. Steady at the 7.25 number. NASDAQ futures up 60. We've been right here since we came in. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, don't be excited, Jack. I'm Tom with Mr. Carl Denninger, SB Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 22. Carl, I got a question for you from, it's going to be taking some deep thought, but we're off the deep end this morning anyway. A lot of my buddies are in town for every 5-year reunion they do at Notre Dame, and these guys are piling in. They're going to spend 4 days down there, and I went and saw them all last night. And one dude's a psychologist who's been on the show. The other guy's a economics professor and a coach, California for years. He just retired. And, we got into talking about it last night, and I don't know if anybody can name the man behind the curtain, but the economics guy was telling me, Chief, every time something like this happens, it's always the government that causes it. If you go back to the Resolution Trust, you had all these savings and loans where an awful lot of people worked at, and it was a simple model, but it worked for, a couple of generations. All of a sudden, the Fed essentially bleeps up Volcker without regard at all to that industry, and I think he could have been a little less heavy-handed, maybe saved some of it, but who knows, it's revisionist history. All of a sudden, these guys are just out of business. There isn't one left. And then you see all these properties end up in the hands of a much narrower group of people, one of them being GE and Capital and a bunch of other places. And I can give you stories about some clients I had at the time in Arizona and how Bush One's buddies got a lot of these properties when even they weren't high bidders. But there's this massive change of equity from one group of people to another. And then all of a sudden you have the 2008 fiasco. Sort of the same thing happens again. I mean, none of the homeowners, necessarily got bailed, yet banks got bailed out for the stuff and other people were able to buy those homes. And now I had one guy who was asking me to find him a buyer. He owned like 600 houses in Chicago. And I know some real estate people now that are putting bids in for a lot of these houses in some of these neighborhoods where all these murders are. Trying to buy places, 20 cents on the buck. And you look around, Carl, and now this whole thing with China, and I don't think Trump's smart enough to pull this off, but when you see all these farmers in Minnesota and these places getting destroyed by this, well, 2-3 years from now, somehow or another, I honestly believe this will be back on beam. You're going to find an awful lot of different owners of those farms, and the same people are going to lose through no fault of their own, some government essential bleep up or something on purpose. This wealth just keeps changing into the same narrower and narrower hands. And the only difference is who's president and whose hands it lands in. And can we survive this? I mean, to me, this has become, and maybe it's just I'm getting old, but this really sucks. I mean, it's this constant. I mean, the homeowner here did not cause the 2007 fiasco. And as much as people say that it's people that shouldn't have got debt, people that shouldn't have got debt, maybe some of that went down. But I'm going to say 85% of it was the normal person who had saved up his 20%, 15%, bought a place at 250, and a year later was worth 160. And whether his parents gave him the dough or he saved it up, he's out of all his equity. And everybody's worried about is the bank's there, but he's out of all of his. I mean, and yet, it shouldn't have been that high. The Fed, of anybody, should have been able to figure out that all this money was coming from Japan. You and I, you maybe, because you have the wherewithal, could maybe have figured that out. I don't even think I could have figured that out. But I mean, the Fed, that's somebody in one of those meetings should have said, "Hey guys, all this money that is bidding up these mortgage things is, there's $35 of debt on every dollar mortgage." You and I wouldn't know that. The Fed would know that. They should know that.
The Fed did know it, and the Fed didn't care. Because everybody was, was fat, dumb, and happy and getting drunk at the bar, right?
Well, yeah, no, but the Armageddon.
And that works right up until it doesn't. But you're right in that you go back to during the Depression, okay? And you had we kind of screwed the pooch in a way there in that you go back to the Supreme Court decision, Wickard v. Filburn, where you had a farmer who was growing crops on his own land to feed his own family, and the government came in and said, "You can't do that because that interferes in interstate commerce." And the guy looked at him, "You have six eyes. I'm not selling this grain." Okay. Yeah. And he said, "Oh, no. You're interfering in interstate commerce. We can prohibit you from doing this because if you grow this crop on your own land to feed your own family, you don't have to go down to the store and buy bread."
Right.
Okay, and they won. The government won that case.
That's pretty special.
right? Well, government agents went around during that time in an attempt to so-called protect people. They actually burned fields.
Well, and they also had auctions where, for taxes, people couldn't pay their taxes, were thrown off their property, and the person who came in wrote the check for the taxes and got somebody else's wealth, essentially.
Well, guess what? The same, you know, there is some personal culpability here within, you know, within people. I look at what happened with my late mother's estate and her home. There was no change in real value. In fact, there's in nominal terms over the space of 25 years. Okay, and why? Because property taxes during that time period more than doubled.
Yep.
And in real terms, that house lost more than 30% of its value because of, you know, of course, inflation. Your money's worth less. But in nominal terms, it wasn't worth anymore.
Well, my, right? One of my good
and
buddies.
So, and guess what? Now somebody else, you know, it's on the market. It's it needed some work. So, all right, it's been sold and they bought it and it's being flipped. It's being put back on the market now. Good luck with that, guys, because the problem is that tax bill never goes away.
How come, Carl, and I'm not, I know, I mean, if you ask me to do somebody else's job, if you ask me to start welding a railroad car together, the thing wouldn't be going on the track straight. I mean, I understand that everybody else's line of work, but the things that you and I talk about, at some level, I mean, I know, you know, I have an advanced degree, I suspect you do too, and we're trying, and this is stuff we deal with every day, but on some level, somebody shouldn't be able to get out of a bachelor's degree without some knowledge of how money works. I mean, there should be a basic economics course in there someplace. And even simple stuff on valuing their own home. And to the point where it has nothing to do with what your mortgage is, it has nothing to do with what the value is, it has to do with when you sell the house to somebody, it's the monthly nut. How much can you pay? Can the person coming in paying? Now, if it's mortgage, that's one thing. If it's insurance, it's another. If it's taxes, but it's that combined number. Or if it's a condo, it's the assessment that goes with it. If somebody can afford $5,000 and your taxes just went up one, guess what? The payment that's due you just went down one, and whatever that translates to into the price of the place at 5%, you just lost your. I mean, one of my buddies is very bright. He's been on the show, an attorney. He's in this area where they had not had an assessment increase in a while. Well, Chicago's out to get. I mean, if you take your shoes off at a, remember I used to take you have to take your shoes off at the Japanese restaurants. If you took your shoes off and left a quarter in there, they're digging in your shoe for the quarter. That's how bad it is here. But so he gets his letter, and all of a sudden their area gets reassessed, and his taxes are up 30%, like from $10,000 to $13,000. And most people would bitch and moan about the extra $3,000. I immediately say, how does it feel that the price of your place just dropped by 8% or 5% or some number? And he looked at me and said, what are you talking about? I'm like, what do you mean, what am I talking about? The next person in, they could say, I can afford, this place is worth $4,500 a month. How much are the taxes? Two. Okay, at least $2,500 for a mortgage. What's the interest rate? There's the price I can pay. I mean, it's amazing how people don't, when a city does that, they just denut essentially what percentage of the city's value. I mean, do they even know they're doing it? Because now all of a sudden, on the other hand, when people start selling it, they're, what am I doing here? I mean, the whole idea of how money works is just, I mean, it shouldn't be people's, you know, I mean, I know it's not their, especially international economics, it's not something people, you know, it's like me doing calculus 40 years after I did it in college. I don't remember how to do it. But the point is, some of this stuff should be fairly basic, and when the city says we're raising taxes 20%, somebody should say, you're not counting my house price 15%, so you can pay pensions to people that don't even work or that aren't working at age 57. But that's what the connection should be, that brazen, and it's not.
Well, it's not, because we seem to forget. You don't need advanced math to understand this stuff. You just need to understand exponents, and you ought to learn that in middle school.
Yeah.
That we actually managed to get kids through high school and out into the world that do not understand the basics of exponents are in everything.
Yeah.
And if you do not understand how they work, you're going to get taken advantage of and screwed throughout your life. And almost all of what's going on from a standpoint of, you know, stocks and house prices and the economy in general, it all comes down to that. And then when the reality starts to bite, governments inevitably look for ways to cheat.
Well, absolutely.
You cannot cheat mathematics. All you can do is shift it onto somebody else.
Which is what we're good at. Carl, we got a dash, buddy. Probably have you on next week to talk about the labor numbers or whenever they, when they come out. They come out next week, so 2 weeks. We won't be long, buddy. You take care of yourself. Thank you very much. SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 18. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Jay-Z on the board, doing a good job of texting Frank. Are we going to hear from you? And Jay-Z's telling me I already got the guy, for God's sake. She's very efficient. SP Futures up 6, Nasdaq Futures up 16. We're either going to have a rally today to make up a little bit for the last couple of days, or it's a dead cat bounce and you got maybe 20 minutes to sell. As of now, we don't know what that is, but Frank does. Frank, which is it? How's that for a lead-in?
Hardly fair.
How's that for a lead-in? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yep, yep.
Okay, a dead cat bounce. I'm voting for a dead cat bounce right now.
Yeah,
or we're at a new normal. We seem to work our way down and sit there, and we've seen it a couple times. I think at the 2880 level, we sat there for a while. The 2835 to 2850 level. And we may be in a new range of, you know, 28,775 to 2,800. I think we're winding our way down, is what it looks like to me.
You know, I think we are too, Frank. I don't know how you can put a low bid on it. We're down about 6% from the high. I noticed yesterday. I was kind of surprised, actually. I went to see the weekly money supply numbers that I haven't done in a couple of weeks, and the growth in M2 over the last 3 months and 13 weeks is now under 3, as low as it's been really since 2008. And I wonder, I don't think the Fed's necessarily doing it on purpose. I think what Powell has done, which I applaud, which probably nobody else does, is he actually has lowered the rate that they're paying interest to the banks. So there actually is a little bit of a Fed funds market, but the yield curve is dramatically inverted right now. I mean, it's not dramatically inverted like when you and I started, when it was, you know, the 30-year was 12% and the 6 month was 15%. It's not like that, but it's definitely, I'll get it up here. You go to, treasury.com, and it gives you the yield curve every day, but the 10-year is definitely below, US treasury yield curve rates. Treasury.gov is where you go with this. And they give it to you every single day. And from the beginning of the year, let me get down to, where are we? We are 528. And we just went from our 30-year. The lowest one in the page is the 10-year. Let me see. 206 is the... I'm thinking so long, I can't read the time. Is the 5-year. Is it 206? And yet the 6 month is 238. So... it's, you know, in percentage terms, it's in 0.2%. It's not a big deal. Like I say, you and I have seen this being 3%, but the clamoring for the Fed to save us and lower the rate here is, I don't know that it does any good at this point, Frank. I really don't. I think it's a lack of demand for money. And I don't know where that's coming from all of a sudden. Well, the demand for money for a while was, a lot of it was companies buying their stock back, and it seems to have slowed. But how big is the demand for money other than automobiles? Which is a little bit out of the system, because I think some of that's the European banks are doing some of that. And credit cards. Are we seeing a lot of business borrowing? We should be. I don't know if we are or not. It's hard to tell.
Well, you put your finger on it in the previous hour when you were talking about access to capital for smaller businesses or medium-sized businesses. And it not be, you know, the demand may be there, but they don't have the access, so you're not going to see it reflected in your numbers.
Well, and you have to be somewhat careful. I mean, I really don't. My criticism of what the government is doing with China is not so much that the Chinese are bad actors. It seems to me, and I could be wrong here, I hope I am, that there doesn't seem to have been an amazing amount of reflection about what exactly are we aiming for. Like Carl says, do we really want them to take our dirty crap we don't want to do anymore, do it over there, pollute their place, and send it back cheaply? Are we gonna say that our companies can't pay the political operative over there so he can keep his finger on the neck of the population, which is what communist governments do and other governments do to a certain extent, but not the same? Are we gonna not allow Chinese people to buy companies here at inflated prices and make some people very wealthy? I don't think we're gonna go down that road. So what exactly are we planning on doing? Other than, you know, I don't know what. Are we gonna come up with a list of 100 things like we would have done do we think they're so bad that we're gonna give them, we're gonna treat them like the Japanese or the Germans in 1938? We're not gonna give them plans anything or oil or anything. I don't think we're there yet. I just don't know where we are, other than causing a problem. Or am I just...
And I don't think this administration knows either. And they aren't the only administration guilty of it.
Oh, no.
We've moved stuff, you know, plants, the dirty stuff to the south during the 70s.
Right.
We saw that. That contributed to the Rust Belt. And then to the Mexican border. And now it's to Asia. I mean, it's part of an ongoing process.
Well, one of the I
don't think we have a plan.
When we started sending stuff to Mexico, I think I was still in grad school, and one of the professors said, "Let me get this straight. If you say you can't pollute on our side of the Rio Grande, but you can pollute on the other side, does the pollution know that it can only come halfway, or is it going to come back over to our side anyway?" was it kind of a dumb thing to say, but it's a question of, we're not going to breathe it. It's not going to be in our water. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, to the point where when Obama and his group come out and say, "Okay, we're gonna get rid of all the coal plants because it's causing this and that." Okay, and we're just going to ship all our coal to China. Well, duh. I mean, it, once it's in the atmosphere, does it really make? I mean, you'd rather not have it in your neighborhood, obviously. But all this stuff has a cost, Frank. Even the three big coal plants here in Chicago, the unsightly things, but at their time, in their day, if you read about them, they were incredibly advanced. The one here in Pilsen was the first huge coal plant here, and at the time, who's the guy who was head of Commonwealth Edison? The guy that they wrote the
Samuel Insull.
Yeah, the guy that they wrote the Holding Company Act for, because the guy was such a he was an issue of trying to buy other places up and do something with them. So that's why there was something called the Public Utility Holding Company Act. But he went to these guys. I don't know if you know the story, Frank. He went to General Electric and he said, "I need a flywheel like this big." And GE says, "We don't even know if we can make one that big." They said, "Well, if you give it your best effort, and if it's just impossible, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for all the time and material or something." Now, the reason why people thought it was impossible, see, you should know this because you're a bright guy, is at full bore, the outside of the flywheel was going to be traveling faster than the speed of sound. And they didn't know, engineering-wise, if that was even possible to do without the thing shaking apart. Isn't that fair? Evidently, if you go to the GE plant, In their front museum / hallway, there's still a piece of that flywheel. Is one of the most incredible things they ever did. And anyway, so I mean, these places, and then all this, but every time you see one of them coming down, there's always a number that says, rather than the 50 or 100 or 150, whatever the number is, $1 million to get the thing up to today's standards, we'll just shut it down. Now, obviously, it's their decision. I don't know the numbers and those kinds of things, but there's usually a cleanup number, something that can get you clean, right? Or at least within the specs. Now, whether that's clean enough, I don't know. The respiratory lung people will probably say no, but other people might. I don't know. If you trust the numbers to be okay, there's always a number that you can say, you know, Frank's outboard motor company for $20 million can actually stop dumping the crap in Lake Michigan if he wants to. And Frank may say, screw that.
Is Waukegan Harbor clean yet?
No, no. Well, that stuff, that's different because that stuff falls to the bottom. Anything that's soluble eventually gets cleaned up. But if it just falls to the bottom, the answer is no. It's like the Calumet River. Can you imagine if you dredge that thing, what you'd pay, all the heavy metals and stuff that'd be on the bottom? But it, but you're going to say
I would need a fish from it.
Yeah, but here you but Frank's going to say, no, I'm picking up my outboard marine place and I'm going to Mexico. They don't care, or I'll have these Chinese guys do it as long as they pay off the local pile. He doesn't care. Now, I mean, it is. Don't you find it interesting that, you know, I don't profess myself at all to be a half-ass expert on China. I mean, Jay-Z probably knows more about it because she studies more history and stuff than I do. But don't you find it odd, Frank, that a people, from what we know about them, are accused or described that in their politics, in their military, and in their economics, think way, way further in advance than we do. Yet when it comes to their environment, it seems like, if that tree's worth $50 for a board, let's cut it down. I mean, we had some people here that I talk about because they try to steal stuff from one of the computers here in the office. They were here in one of these agricultural. They sent five people here, and they hired a couple people. One of them was affiliated with us to do agricultural stuff. We took them on barge trips. We took them on to farms. We took them to a dairy farm. We took them to a ethanol plant. I went a couple times. It wasn't my job to take them around, but other people did. And the one young lady who was 27, she was already way up the chain at the Department of Agriculture in China, and she left home at like 17, got on a train, never went back. And anyway, very bright. And she was saying, you know, there used to be, I thought she said, there used to be six or seven rivers in Beijing, and now there's like one. The rest of them have either dried up or been dammed up or something. So, I mean, the environment has dramatically changed, isn't it? I mean, you would think that the same long-term view that people are accusing them of having versus Trump with a short-term view, they would have toward their environment, but it appears they don't. I mean, what do you make of that? I mean, it's hard. I'm not asking you to, you know, to dissect the Asian mentality, but it seems a little odd, doesn't it?
I think we had the same mentality at one point. Think about it. When we were kids, every picnic table was made out of redwood. Redwood siding is what you wanted. Your outdoor furniture was made out of redwood.
That's because the bugs hate redwood.
I haven't seen anything made out of redwood for 50 years.
Well,
maybe we cut them all down. But
they're expensive. The bugs don't like them. Right? That's why you want redwood. It's redwood or cedar. They don't rot. Correct? I mean, I know some of this because I...
Right, I would guess that cedar grows a lot quicker than redwood.
Maybe.
My experience is yes.
Yes. And then we started... This is interesting. One of the most interesting scams ever put on our societies, and they came out with that treated wood.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever... long story short, don't tell it, but back in the 80s, early 80s, they had just come out with they had developed the Galena territories and put the first golf course in and everything. And some people from the trade, this is out in Galena, hence the name, and it's this gorgeous area of rolling hills and so forth. For those who don't know the history, Joe Davies County in Illinois is the only northern county here that wasn't covered by the glacier, right? So it's amazingly hilly. It's gorgeous. I mean, if there's ski slopes, there's the best golf course. Best golf course views of any place on earth. The general, what you can see, three states and three of the T's, Frank, or something. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. And the Mississippi.
Yeah, all the people from the floor, we used to go out there for golf outings, and you'd stay in the houses, and they'd rent them, and there's a lodge there and everything. And these houses were, people bought them, and then people ended up selling them because it really is a little too far to go there on a weekend. It's, if you're downtown, it's a solid 3:45, 4 hours, and you just can't do that every week. It's not like going to Lake Geneva or Long Beach. So people eventually kind of sold them. A couple guys I know still have them out there. But all of a sudden, I go out there maybe 8 years ago, and these houses they're beautiful, and they're $125,000. So I go to, you know, Robin. Robin's been on the show a bunch of times. Her husband,
mm-hmm.
husband, one of the nicest guys. He's a structural engineer and a builder. In fact, he built two houses for Senator Louderman. Big high-end homes he builds. Anyway, so I said to him, well, what's the story with this? His name's Alan. I said, Alan, what's the story with these houses? He goes, when were they built? And I said, you know, early 80s. He goes, they've all got timber foundations. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, when people came out with the treated lumber, it was guaranteed for 75 years or 60 years or something. He goes, within like 3 years, they were in every single building code. That if you're going to build a porch, you better have your uprights with this stuff, or you couldn't build a porch. Remember how you used to use regular wood, Frank, and you'd paint it? You know, all the time.
Right, and stain it and paint it and all that stuff.
Well, he says you can't do that anymore. You had to use, well, the stuff came out, what I'll say is 60-year guarantee. He goes, after 25 years, they're no good. He goes, you buy one of those homes, he goes, but you're going to have to jack it up and replace it with concrete or with stone. He goes, which is it's a $75,000 job. It doesn't mean, he says, if you add the 75 to the 125, you're buying the place, which is real cheap. He says, the end result of 200 grand is probably okay. He goes, it's actually probably priced right. He goes, but that's why those things are all sort of crumbling. But what they didn't tell you is they use like the worst grade of wood for that stuff. Even now, if you go buy that, because I do some work with people, because I love doing it. Even now, if you go buy treated lumber, unless you pay up the dollar a board, it's not graded for ground contact. You got to pay more for that. So you think you can get this and like plunk it in the water and plunk it on the ground, then it's okay. No, it's not. Unless you get the one that specifically says that it is. So these guys went out and essentially had this guarantee for this length of time, and they didn't. So that's my story on the lumber. I don't know how I got digressed off that way, but you're the one who sent me that way. We're talking about the guarantee.
It's always my fault. No, I have no problem with that.
But it's just a question of, you know, guarantees in a way. But now a lot of that stuff came from China, came from Canada, and it was all kinds of, what do you call it there? It was originally arsenic. So you would essentially inject the boards with arsenic, because guess what? Termites and other little creatures that like to live in your wood aren't very big on arsenic, right? So after 20 years, people say, wait a minute, now we got this arsenic problem. I mean, it never ends, does it, Frank? I mean, they always take the shortcut, somehow get the building code, and then all of a sudden there's stuff that's... Then there was the plasterboard from China down south that was actually eating through the electrical wires when it got wet. And what the hell was in that stuff? Started eating through copper.
Oh, or you can talk about lumber liquidators and the flooring they were importing from China. It was like, holy cow.
But how much of this... The poor guy, what Mr. T, I pity the fool. The poor guy is the guy who's trying to compete rationally with these people. When you've got political people over there, you know, making sure nobody ever strikes, so they're happy or not happy. They're committing suicide by the day, but they're working for 40 cents an hour and all the rice they can eat. And I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean, these people are being, they're like the slave labor. Well, slave labor, the child labor that was here in this country. You know, the four, people at 14 years. I mean, it's horrible. It has been for a long time. But of course, if we get stuff cheaper, we don't care. And yet, look at all the amount of people in the political group over there that have nothing but money that are coming to Canada and coming here. How does a regular person come over here with $500,000 when the average wage is, the median wage is what? $2 an hour, $1 an hour, if that? But all this stuff's happening, Frank. They don't care about pollution. They don't care about their people, not everybody. And all of a sudden, they're coming over here to live life to the max. I mean, with all this stuff about Trump, and he doesn't want any Mexicans up here, he doesn't want anybody from Guatemala, do people know that there's a little favor college rule that if you come over here and if you have enough money to build, say, a six flat and create a job for, what is it, Frank, 10 people for a year, that's worth citizenship for you and your family and like three other people or some number. It has nothing to do with, I mean, you all of a sudden are shepherded through. You can buy your way in to a massive extent.
Well, I know a lot of the big real estate developers are marketing that.
Yeah, yeah.
They've pointed the finger at Kushner. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's it is part of his marketing.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you?
I mean, if you're going to get, rather than go to a bank, and the Frank Chief combo is not going to get a great loan, if we want to put a place up and we say, look, we'll set this thing up that you guys are all, I don't know if they're going to be general partners, limited partners, whatever the hell they have to be. I'm sure we can find somebody to, some smart lawyer to put the thing together. If we bring over 10 of those guys and we're putting up a 20-story apartment tower here, and every one of those guys becomes a partner, and every one of them is going to loan us money at, say, 1.5% or 2%, but the kicker is they get five citizenships, I bet we could put together a group in a week. And people
right,
are doing
and
that.
We wouldn't care if it came from the Russian mob or from China.
No. And all of a sudden we've got
that's
a bunch of...
That's not our job.
No, it's not our job to do that. We'd go to the embassy and we'd say, this is what we're willing to do, and I'll bet people start calling us. Why aren't we doing that? Just for bleeps and grins, why aren't we doing that? If it's
because it rubs us the wrong way.
That's right.
It does, because we're way too Catholic. Father Hesper got his claws into us.
Evidently, or the nuns before him or something. But now the point is,
oh God.
But the question is, and a follow-on from what I was talking about with Carl, right now we're expecting, somehow we're expecting this to be America, and if we shut the Chinese off even 20%, we're expecting, you know, 1,000 people Jay-Z's age to be rushing out, filling the void. And I don't know, between student loans, between capital constriction, I don't know that we can fill the void that fast. This is not the... It, maybe we can in some areas. I'll bet... Now, if Kevin was on, Kevin would say that you can pull this off in the smaller town areas. Because there's places
and
available...
And he's working to prove it.
He's working
we
to prove it.
We need more people like Kevin.
Yes.
Don't tell him I said that.
No, you can't tell him. No,
no,
but go right to
really, we do.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that he is probably correct. In his area, you can have that movement. There's enough smaller banks there, and I think there's enough people that are willing to come up with what do they call it? Not the baby capitalism. What do they call those guys? Angel investors? Angel? I'll bet Kevin
right.
could pull some of this off in his area. I don't know. You can do it here in Chicago. You're not going to get a permit for a year. You got to pay somebody off for that. Why do you think Chicago is a bleep hole when it comes to this kind of stuff now? Unless you're Google size or McDonald's size and can get a high rise, in which case they'll basically perform oral sex on you. Anybody other than that, you know, forget it. Right? I think that the answer is, it's not no. It's not, the glass isn't half empty, but I don't think it's half full either, Frank. I mean, what if you walked into the Harris here and said you want that loan? They'd say, who the hell are you? But I'll bet Kevin could pull that off in his area. And I'll bet
and you know what? He and Buttigieg are two peas in a pod in many ways.
Yep.
And I'm sure he's shivering right now by my saying that. But they're people with a vision and are willing to work towards it.
Right.
And I guarantee Buttigieg and Kevin could work together.
Right. But we'd have to get in the middle once in a while.
Yeah, no, they'd be good buddies, and, you know, they'd have the public personas and the private personas.
I suppose.
But, I mean, that's why South Bend's getting better. But where's the money going to come from? It's going to have to come from people, you know, the old money that's still in South Bend. That's where the investing's going
to
come from.
It has to come.
And maybe the university.
I mean, the idea is that somebody like Jay-Z, I'm going to use old term numbers, makes 100 hours a week, saves 20. They have their job, and they're happy. And for the other person to say, if I had that 20, I can make 8% with it, and we can pay Jay-Z 3.5. And Jay-Z says, that's fine with me. And that's how the circle's supposed to rotate, right? And somehow
right.
we've managed to screw up the circle. And we wonder why.
Well, now there's only five arcs to the circle instead of thousands of arcs.
Right. And we
don't. You know, each arc being a bank.
Well, and part of it is regular people don't get to save very much. If they do, it's in a 401k and it's in the stock market, which looks a tad wobbly. Hopefully that won't be any more of a problem than 6% down, 8% down or something. You know, it's not going to be, worse than that. But who knows? I mean, it could be. But God help us if the market goes down like 40%. Because you've got, you know, older people that are 90-95% in stocks, which traditionally is not the place for them. But how do you get somebody to put their money in a bank at zero? I mean, it's a tough do. I mean, I was touting.
They go see you and get 2.35 from the Treasury auction.
Well, 3 weeks ago it was what? 2.55. Now it's 2.35. Heading south. You know, I don't think it's going to go under 2 again, but what if it does? I mean, it's now you're back to, geez, 2%. What am I going to do with that? Well, it's better than, it's definitely better than losing. So, Frank, you think we're up 975 now. Any chance we actually get a reasonable bounce for a day?
Well, what do you call a reasonable bounce?
Two-thirds.
I think if we get a bounce, we're going to have people that go, oh, gosh, there's the door out.
Well, if you're
Fibonacci... I'd be a working seller right now.
Fibonacci, dude, you'd
then
be
Then again, I've been wrong for 3 years.
Well, you know, even a blind squirrel wins one once in a while, you know. You might be in it. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. Saw some of my Notre Dame buddies last night. It was fun. You take care of yourself. Talk to you.
Oh, that's a great time. Are you going down tomorrow?
I might just go down for a couple hours because I'm going to see him again. All the guys I know will come through here, and we're going to cook out again on Sunday. You know, Odd's working. And So I might just go down for, like, a breakfast and come back.
Well, Audrey took good care of us. We took up the keys from her on Saturday or Sunday.
Well, a previous contributor to the show, the late Bob Golden, one of the reasons I want to go down is I want to see his widow, one of the nicest people, one of the nice people I've ever met. I haven't seen her in a while, so if I go down, it'll be, Audrey really wants to see her too, so I really miss Bob. We miss him on the show because talk about a bright guy. Anyway, we'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomasi, Jay-Z on the board. We're having David Adelman here in a second. SP Futures now up 975. We're just up 11. We got a little bit of a bounce. NASDAQ Futures up 29, so maybe we are going to get a... Maybe we come up half of what we were down yesterday. That would be nice. Dow Futures up 47 over in Europe. We've got a little bit of putting a whip to it here. Not very much, but better than it was earlier. DAX up 32.3%. FTSE up 28.4%. CAC run up 12.2%. So CAC run's not... It's been the worst performer of the three in the last week or so. Nikkei down 60.3%. Shanghai down 9.3%. So not much there. Hanging above 29.05. Hang Seng down 120.4%. We've got oil, kind of a mixed bag. We've got West Texas up a whole 3 cents. Brent down 60 cents. Now, that spread has been widening. It's $10 exactly. It made it as high as like 10.60 the other day. RBOB gas, $1.92. Gold down $1.70. Still 12.84. It was up a little bit yesterday. Silver, 14.42. So still in a very narrow range. And we've got the 10-year yield, 2.24. We'll probably should start giving that as it's rebounding from a 20-year low, 20-month low. Couple of headlines. China says U.S. trade provocations are naked economic terrorism. Whatever hell that means. Barclays says Tesla is stalling as a niche automaker cuts its price target to 150. I'm not so sure I could ever put any my client's money in Tesla, but it just seems too risky to me. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago weather today looks like it's clearing up outside. Today's high is 69, low of 54. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 97, low of 69. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Astros 2-1. White Sox beat the Royals 8-7. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 5-4. In traffic, there's an accident blocking the two right lanes on the Dan Ryan going west at 91st Street. And there's nothing else to report. Back to you.
Is there any truth to the rumor that David was out kicking the tires of a Tesla as a midlife crisis car?
Nope, not true.
Just saying, if it's a rumor, that's what happens. Most rumors are false, you know, but some aren't. Just saying. Did anybody kick tires? By the way, they don't even have a Tesla showroom, do they?
I'm going to have to call back. I have bad reception. I'll call back.
Yep. Jeez, I don't think that Tesla has a dealership network. I think you sort of that.
I've seen pop-up shops, but I've never seen a dealership.
Yeah, I think they. Matter of fact, some states had laws that you had to have a dealership, and I somehow.
Why?
Good question. Because why can't our auto dealers be open on Sunday? Because they got the state to pass a law saying they don't have to be. Can't be.
Hmm.
I mean, name another industry that can't be open on Sunday. Well, I mean, banks traditionally haven't been, but David,
I'm back.
Sounds
I'm
better
here.
Can you see now? Hear now? Hey,
what
happened on
can
the?
You hear me?
Yes, very much. Speaking of Tesla, do they have no dealership network, or do they have a couple around?
No, they have one. I shouldn't say that. I don't know over the whole country. But I know there's actually one about 5 minutes from my house, and they had one on Grand Avenue, but I think it moved out west. I forget, Naperville or whatever. So I know there's at least a couple in our area. As far as over the whole country, I don't know.
Well, didn't they challenge a couple of states that said you can't sell a car in a state without having a dealership, like South Carolina or North Carolina?
Yeah, and there was stuff, I think New Jersey and Connecticut, that if they didn't have an on-premise repair shop, and they had to send the car away, they couldn't have one, and Tesla challenged that. Yeah, it's been a mess.
It's odd. What market wise, Frank was just saying he's thinking. Well, he was opining that maybe we got to 28.50 for a while and hung there, and then we got to 28.10 for a while and hung there, and he's thinking we're kind of ratcheting it down in an orderly manner. At least it looks like that what might be happening. Do you agree or not?
Yeah, technically, I mean, it's no technical formation is perfect. Any person who's been at it as long as I have, or others, sorry, or whatever, you study all the formations, they're not, there's always, a little nuance here or consolidation here that takes away the symmetry or whatever. But that said, S&P, NASDAQ, and Dow, not Russell, have all formed fairly congruent, fairly symmetrical head and shoulders tops. The main one is the S&P. Depending on how you draw the neckline, whether it's flat or slightly inclined, which are, you know, is the way it's supposed to be. You don't want a declining, you know, neckline on the top. So the neckline's apropos, and around 2800 to 2810. And if you take that away, basically it's real easy. From 2950 to 2800 is 150. Take 150 from 2800, it's 2650. And that's the target until you show me a close or two above 2810. So, you know, on the other side of the coin, some of the price momentum oscillators are getting fairly extended. And so I certainly wouldn't say, even though the formation is ugly, and I think, frankly, the news, I mean, you'd know it better than I, but, you know, everything kind of suggests, whether it's trade or Italian bank situation or Iranian situation or whatever, even though the consumer, you know, sentiment index came out, you know, whatever, decade highs, 15-year highs, whatever it was, it looks to me like the consumer is pulling back, the retailers have been bashed, and it looks like slowdown. So my thought would be, you know, if you have an unhedged portfolio or, you know, need some protection on various issues or whatever, if we rally back to 2805, 2810 in there, which is not too far away, we got a June future at 2790.5, so 10, 15 points up, you know, you ought to take some protection. Beyond that, if it can give me a close or two above 2810, then who knows? Maybe we'll get some kind of easing of trade tensions or some announcement of some kind of a very soft deal on June 20th at the G20 meeting, something. But right now it looks pretty ugly.
It was unanimous darn near in CNBC yesterday. If only the Fed would save us with a half a point rate deduction here, everything will be okay. Boy, I don't see that at all. Carl and I and Frank were talking for an hour and a half about structural issues, that the thing with China in my mind is like pushing out there, that if all of a sudden we expect the people here to jump into the abyss, shall we say, of product that's not coming from China. I mean, even if it's, I see people not able to get those loans. I don't know that some areas of the country, I think we can be off and running in 6 months and producing things that, I'll say used to be produced in China. Some areas of the country, I think, are pretty darn sticky. I find it very hard to believe somebody in Chicago can get a loan in an old factory and start going with get a permit and everything else. I don't see how you do that here, David. Now, in Southwest Michigan, where Kevin is, he seems to think that people there, if they got an idea, they could get rolling. I mean, you know, maybe not tomorrow or next week, but pretty fast. I think we'll see if this gets worse and worse, how quickly our companies either you know, start reform, recompete, redo something, or they just raise prices and sit back fat and happy. I'm not sure how this is going to work out or where it's going. Are you? I mean,
I don't think anybody is, and that's why I think the market's, you know, moving like it is. You know, even yesterday, as ugly as the day was, you know, the Dow covered half of the 400 point loss, you know, mostly in the last hour. So, I mean, it's, you know, pretty good volatility. And intraday and intraday, and no, I don't think anyone knows. On the other hand, and I agree with, you know, 95% and 98% of what you said. On the other hand, not a yield curve expert, not a fundamental expert. I do, you know, 75-80% technicals, and the rest, you know, news and research. But you know, I do think, you know, if you say, oh well, it's a 3-year 10-year, you know, curve inversion and that kind of thing, I don't think that's, you know, what really controls credit. There's no question if you take all parts of the yield curve and invert all of them, then you're going to probably shut off credit. So I agree with that. On the other hand, I think, well, you know, mainly banks to the best of my knowledge, loan to corporations and make mortgages on homes and businesses and manufacturing. But, you know, we're really moving to a service-oriented, you know, AI robotics type of economy much more than manufacturing. So know that manufacturing it may be outsourced to Vietnam and Thailand and, you know, Singapore and South Korea, but it's not, you know, going to all come here. It's not. That said, I don't think that, you know, I think banks, you know, take from savers, you know, some from the Treasury, but on short term, and try and loan it out, you know, prime plus to, you know, General Motors or Ford for 10 years, or to you and me for a mortgage for 15 to 30 years. And as long as those don't invert, I think it's, you know, in fairly decent shape. And, you know, yes, the banks will have to operate on a smaller margin. I mean, some of these are starting to do, you know, CDs and, you know, 3-month, you know, promotional type things at, you know, 2.05. I saw one at 2.4% yesterday. So if they have to go out to 15 or 30 year and get 3.5, their margins are getting squeezed, but nevertheless, it's positive, and I don't think that'll shut off credit. And the other thing that you know, again, is there is we've talked for years about the heavy, you know, debt equity, you know, ratios, and some of that can be pulled in and refinanced at lower interest rates. So it's not all negative.
If we have access, but the or you get a credit card rate 24. But by the way, we have a listener that called in, didn't want to be on the air. I want to ask you, because I've been kind of raising the specter all week, little hints here and here, and we've started to see a little creep in the prices. What about corn? And I'll add to it, what about soybeans? The listener wants to know about corn. Are we going to... I believe that the places I've gone by in the last week, no one of those guys are going to plant corn, David. They're going to have to fall back on soybeans.
It's too wet. Yeah. We had 13 straight days of rain, and with the overnight rain last night and this morning, it's the wettest May in Chicago ever. Now, Chicago isn't, you know, Iowa or, you know, Quad Cities or, you know, Ohio or whatever in Wisconsin, but nevertheless, it is really, really, really wet. And actually, without patting myself on the back, all the price momentum oscillators in the July soybeans, for example, down in the 815, 820 area, you know, got so extended. I mean, you were talking single digits. And on my, you know, daily trading ideas, not recommendations, just ideas, I put out a buy in July beans at 819. It went through there, so it was easily filled if anyone wanted to do it. 876 last.
Well, I mean, are we gonna see a real issue with the corn prices? Because, I mean, the Arkansas River is 20 feet above flood stage, a new record. How can you be 20 feet above flood stage in flat area? How far is that thing going? Miles? It must be. I mean,
you're talking the low May 13th. I mean, we're not talking a long time ago. I mean, we're talking a little over 2 weeks. 343, now 423. I mean, it's moved well over 20%. That does not mean I would buy them now, but, you know, any decent, you know, 5% setback in any of these, you know, yeah, I think it's going to affect not just what is planted, but when it's planted and yields and whatever does come out is going to be a late crop and probably is going to be low yield.
Well, what has happened since, well, David and I just didn't join the business yesterday. Kind of wish we did somewhat. What we did. I won't even say what reunion this is at Notre Dame, but how much in the last, let's say, since we started in the 80s, this is more of a Dan question probably, because Dan, even though he traded the corn pit, so he's always had an affinity for keeping up on this stuff. Well, how much do you think the newer seed, you know, some is a GMO, whatever, let's not get into that. The newer seed, what do you think it shortened the growing year if you use the shortest growing seed? It's got to be 20 days at least.
I wouldn't know that. Dan would know better than I. But, yeah, I mean, I've read enough research to know that, yeah.
Because that's what you see, corn and soybeans inching up when you hear about people's soybean crop in, you know, South Dakota and Minnesota and so forth. I'm going to say, in corn, I think Dan told me once that the combination of the seed and the warming climate has caused the corn belt to go, I don't know if he told me, 10 miles a year, 15 miles a year in the last 30 years, up to where it's way north of where it used to be when he was trading on the corn floor in the mid 80s.
I know just, you know, anecdotally, just traveling into Wisconsin, they've always had some corn, but now it's not Iowa, it's not Illinois, it's not Indiana, but there's a ton of corn up there.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, the corn that used to be up there, I know because Audrey had a place up there of a bed and breakfast where we used to go, and she's into horses, and of course they put me on some nag, and I hated it. And I'd get on there, and
how did the nag feel?
Well, the nag would literally turn around and look at me like, here's a rookie. What am I doing with this? It's a bad sign when a horse turns around and looks at you. Anyway, so
did you tell the nag the years you've had in softball? That should help.
Yeah. I just said, you know what? Just get me back in one piece, and the happiest part of the day is the day I get off the thing. That's just me. I love horses, to bet on them. That's about as close as I want to get. Anyway, so Audrey, of course, loves them, right? If she had a horse to go push him around, it's a huge animal, and she's pushing him around and cleaning his feet and stuff, I'm going, what are you doing? What if the guy steps on you? Anyway, but they had corn, but what they did was they never harvested it. They just knocked it down, and they had a lot of cattle. They leave the mother. I don't know how old they are. I'm trying to explain this as a city boy. Anyway, they would get the little guys, and they'd run around out there for let's say a year, and they got paid, you know, 8 cents a pound or something for all the weight they gained, and then at some point they would go from there to the feedlot.
Right.
And so, but that corn was all, what do you call it, silage when you leave it out in the field, and they would just go out there and eat the corn right in the field. You didn't even have to. So they had corn, but it wasn't like some massive, you know, combine going by and, you know, all of a sudden you see the plants in this machine and out the end comes corn. I mean, it's, you know, $1 million machine or something. But,
right. But
it makes a difference. So the bottom line is, I'm going to say, long story short, too late, that there was a time, David, when you probably couldn't even plant corn right now. And yet I'm going to say, I'll ask Dan after the show for tomorrow, that I'm going to say they probably have another 10 to 20 days. Easy.
I would think so. Yeah. I've you know, sometimes if it doesn't take right away, they'll replant. They'll do a second seeding.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've even not often, and it does affect yield. And you know, but they've had late crops, you know, where they've planted even beginning of July.
And that's got to be with the latest greatest seed, because you're talking not even 90 days, but we had guys on the show years ago from that were farmers, and I'm going to say we've been doing the show 9 years or so, that guys would be very happy, and they would consider themselves, and some of these guys were, you know, pretty leading edge, that if you've got over 200 bushels of an acre, you were a top tier guy. Now I think in the good soil in Illinois or Iowa, if you're not getting over 200 bushels an acre, you're kind of a schlump. Or the weather got to you somehow. So,
well, but this rain, I don't know that they're going to get that.
No, I don't know if they're going to get that either. But I, like I said, when I first mentioned it a few weeks ago when corn was so low, I'm thinking, I wonder if it's a buy here, just as a contrarian sort of guy. But I didn't know. If I knew it was going to rain for a solid 2 weeks, I mean, God, you're up, like I say, you're up, what are you, almost up a dollar a bushel?
80 cents a bushel.
That's a real number. I mean, it's a real number. I mean, there's been two or three year time periods where corn didn't move 80 cents, right?
It's been an incredible, and I'm not going to lie, when I put that trade out as a good idea, you know, at 8:19 in the July beans, I did not envision that it was going to go like this in 2 weeks.
Is there that much rain up in Minnesota? Because those are the guys that have to sell theirs to China, so they're kind of in trouble anyway. I mean,
I don't know the answer to that.
There's a lot of stuff.
I know across the Midwest, I mean, it's been coming straight across
Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. I mean, I know those states, but further north. I mean, I know Wisconsin, just anecdotally, I called a golf course to see it was open, and they said, no, we're closed, and this one you can only walk, and this one is cart paths only, but they said they've had not as much rain as they've had here, but they've had rain for you know, 13, 14 days as well.
That's beautiful, because they not only don't get anybody playing, it's doing damage. So you got the both ends of the club hit you upside the head, right?
Oh, they're dying.
Yeah.
I mean, courses that were, you know, $90 for prime time, or, you know, please play $35 and stuff like that. They're begging. Walking only, of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're just dying.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a great sport. Hey, I mean, today I would like to see a little bounce, because I wouldn't mind selling some calls. I bought all my calls in maybe a little too soon yesterday morning. I didn't sell it. It could be the ones that expire this Friday. I don't see. I still think, David, that the market, as they say in the South Side, is still convinced that the immediate risk is to the upside. With two or three tweets.
That might be true, but only because we've come off, you know, 5.5% in the S&P and 12% in the Russell or whatever. So now, if beyond all this rhetoric and calls for impeachment and Iran and Italian banks and whatever, it's somewhat, I can't tell you how much of it, I can't tell you if it's 50% or 80% factored in the lower prices, but a lot of it has likely been discounted in the prices. So if there's any easing of tensions, whether they be, you know, Iran or, you know, maybe a soft deal, or at least less rhetoric between the U.S. and China, whatever, now the risk probably is to the upside.
Well,
but if it gets worse and they slap, you know, more tariffs on, and, you know, we walk away from North Korea in the you know, quote-unquote agreement, which nothing evident there, you know, then, hey, you know, we could go to 2650, no question.
I've been so involved in this other stuff. Italian banks never really got solvent. What all of a sudden in the last week has got the headlines humming again?
The EU is clamping down on them as far as, you know, balance sheet and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the balance sheets have never been good.
No, I know, but the EU's kind of sloughed it off, but now when things are tight and Germany's, you know, slowing, and their exports are slowing, and this is slowing, and there's trade tensions that are even affecting, you know, Germany and China because of what we're doing, they're clamping down. They're scrambling.
Well, I mean, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but the idea of, I really think that a month ago, people were afraid to be short, maybe 6 weeks ago, because it seemed to me, again, this is just one man's observation, but I'm starting to hear a lot of people on TV that are normally all totally bullish talking the same way. It seemed to me that 6-8 weeks ago, most people felt that the risk was to the upside, and we were one tweet away from Z and I cut a deal, and this is over. I don't see every day when this seems. It seems to most people now, I think, that we're spinning lower, and we're at least five tweets away. It'd be hard to even imagine, with all the name calling and all the stuff going on right now, for anybody to declare victory like this week.
No, I know what you're saying, and I agree with you, but think of what you just said.
Yeah.
We made a little bit of a high, not much, but a little bit of a high other than Russell, you know, 6 weeks ago, and everybody was saying then, oh, you know, 3,000, maybe 3,200, and the risk is to the upside. And where was the risk? To the downside.
Yep.
Now, everyone and their brother, even the bulls, are saying, oh my God, it's melting away in 2650 and the S&P is a lot, which it can be. The formation is there, but now the risk is downside, everything's rolling over. Well, remember, they all said it was going much higher and it went lower. Now they're all saying it's going lower, so who knows, maybe it'll go higher.
Did you see the little piece?
I don't know.
We only have a few seconds, David, but did you see the piece on CNBC where the one lady who does really some great work, she was out at the port of Long Beach in a cargo ship, one of those container ships that I have no idea how many containers they hold. Everyone that comes in from China, they're averaging a $15 million bill in tariffs per ship.
Yeah, I saw that. And Wells, isn't her name Wells?
Oh, yeah, she does a terrific job. SP Futures up 875. NASDAQ futures up 26. I like saying that because we've been down forever. David, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.